This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, motoring's biggest power hour, brought to you by Auto Trader, the trusted motoring marketplace. No guest in studio today, but a solid lineup. It has been an extremely eventful and motoring-filled weekend in the studios today with me, as usual. George, how are you doing, George?
How's it, Ty?
Yeah, fantastic, man. Fantastic. Very, very good, thank you. And we have Fazana, who has decided to pitch in today. How are you, Fazana?
I'm good, thanks, and you, Ty?
Well, yes, Fazana's always here. She just, just silent.
She's normally just silent, doing all of our social media things. So, just on that, at Auto Trader SA on our social media platforms and hashtag Auto Central, and get involved. Let's have some conversation, and we've got Fazana in studio here. She'll read the comments, and we can answer questions if you people have any. So let's jump into the news. And crazy, I mean, you know, you just I logged on to News24 this morning, and the first kind of three big, you know, news stories from the past week is a toddler among 10 killed in a Mpumalanga head-on crash. Cool. 10 people, including a 3-year-old toddler, were killed in a head-on collision between a Toyota Avanza and a Buccaneer Standerton on Monday. That's really, really shocking. The next article, 11 killed, passengers trapped under bus in horror crash. In Mbombela, a crash involving a bus and a truck resulted in the deaths of 11 people on the Butt Plus Road, about 3 k's outside Mashatadorp.
What are the causes of these crashes? I mean, is it somebody falling asleep?
I don't know, George. I mean, I haven't, you know, I just picked up the headlines, yeah. And I think it's just playing to a theme that people are not, they're obviously just, either vehicles are not roadworthy or people aren't driving properly, or people are just...
Probably a combination of all of it.
Probably a combination. I mean, here's another. Child among 4 killed in Mpumalanga, head-on collision. You know, 3 adults and a girl believed to be around the ages of 9 were killed when 2 vehicles collided on the N17 in Secunda. It's just, I don't know. I think people become lackadaisy when they drive. You know, if you're going on a long trip, but to me it's a problem. I don't know if the roads are being policed properly, or do you think it's just negligence of drivers?
Yeah, probably all of the above. I don't think, I mean, nobody gets into a car with the intention of having an accident.
No, so, for sure, exactly.
It's probably partly fatigue, negligence, bad roadworthy vehicles.
And I mean, accidents do happen. I mean, we're completely aware of that. But it's becoming a big problem in our country.
Yeah.
It really, really is.
Well, I don't know if it's becoming a big problem. It's probably always been there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I don't think it's necessarily any worse or any better. It's just never been any good.
Yes, exactly. And we know that on those long stretches, it's hard to police on roads like that. So, you know, it could be driver fatigue, you know, guys with trucks and stuff like that, because obviously trucks and buses as well. But yeah. Really just, you know, it's not nice. It's not nice when people lose their lives.
Absolutely.
For no reason, yeah. To be completely honest. So anyway, let's... get on to some positive stuff. Well, positive for some people, not positive for others, but did you know that Cape Town is the most congested traffic city in South Africa?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's the most congested city in the freaking world.
No, well, it lies 33rd in the world congested traffic. Yeah. So basically, and what the guys in Cape Town have done is 4 months ago, 6 traffic wardens were put out into the CBD to alleviate traffic congestion. Now, I'm just drawing a comparison to what we have in Joburg with the outsurance pointsmen. The CBD in Cape Town gets gridlocked in the afternoon between like 3 and 6. Yeah. So they've put these wardens in there. The guys have all got cameras on them as well. After 4 months, they ended it in June, the report back has been phenomenal from people traveling in the city and the city itself saying that it's really, really working. So it's nice to see that they're going to continue with this.
Yeah. What do these wardens do with the cameras?
So they've got cameras on them.
Yeah.
So they're filming all the footage that they see. So I'm assuming that when somebody's going, well, you can't give me a fine for doing X, Y, and Z, he can say, hang on a sec, let's go and have a look at the footage.
Yeah.
So it also, I think... when it comes to breaking the law, if you know someone's filming you, you're going to think twice about it.
Yes.
So they've implemented this.
That's actually turning the dash cam around on the public, because I think you know, the cops that are doing their jobs properly,
yes,
probably getting a raw deal because you know all the focus is on the corruption.
Correct.
But now the guys that are really towing the line, that camera's turned it around a little
completely
bit,
turned it around. Yeah. So between kind of 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 6:30, they monitor traffic and they make sure that the roads are flowing nicely. But between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m., they are kind of peacekeepers as well. So they're obviously walking the beat, you know, like Bobby's doing in the UK. And these guys have got complete rights to fine you even for non-moving traffic violations. So if you've parked badly, if you're blocking an intersection, if you're driving like a chop, these guys have authority to fine you, and they've already issued about 1.3 million rands worth of fines.
Wow. Well, I mean, I was in Cape Town on Thursday and Friday, and all of my meetings in Cape Town City Centre on Friday, I didn't have to use an Uber anywhere. I didn't have to drive anywhere. I walked to everywhere I had to go. It was all in kind of a couple of blocks of the office, and it was a pleasure.
It is a pleasure,
absolute pleasure. I didn't have to get into a vehicle.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's how Europe is, and most, you know, countries overseas. You know, if you're in the CBD, you can walk to your meetings, and everyone's kind of
exactly
is there. You know, I think the problem with Joburg is everyone's kind of.
Yeah, it's very
all far. All over the show. Just quickly talking about Cape Town, you went to a very, very special coffee shop, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes. They're called Brownies and Downies.
Brownies and Downies.
And what this, you know, it was it almost humbled me when I walked into that coffee shop, because you see these people that have got disabilities, mental disabilities, and particularly Down syndrome, and these people have started a business to help these individuals with Down syndrome, and all of the waiters and waitresses have Down syndrome, so it's a humbling experience, and they're very successful.
It's fantastic.
Well, fantastic.
I mean, you would have obviously experienced this, because you actually then spend time with somebody who does have that kind of disability, and they're regular, loving, normal people. There is a problem, but they really are cool people to be around. You can learn a lot from them. You really can. So just quickly, did you know that driving into a congested intersection is a by law offense? You're not allowed to. You know, you always get that one chopper at a robot that tries to, as it turns red, he's like, oh, I'm going to go through. And then he gets caught in the middle of the intersection. Not allowed to do that.
That's brilliant. It's like jaywalking.
Exactly.
I mean, I was walking around Cape Town. I pushed the button at almost every intersection, waited for the green man, crossed the road, everyone else is just flipping,
just going, gunning,
bolting across the road. I thought myself, oof.
Well, a lot of countries that is illegal to do.
Jaywalking. It's illegal in South Africa to jaywalk. It just doesn't get enforced.
It's just not policed. I think we've had that conversation on the show before. Anyway, moving on. VW have recently produced their 150 millionth vehicle.
Wow.
Which is really, really cool. VW's been around for 80 years. They've got 50 production sites across 14 countries. And they've produced their 150 millionth Volkswagen, which I think is, I mean, that's a mind blowing number.
I wonder who's driving that one.
Well, I don't think they've sold it yet. It's obviously just come off the production line, but quite a milestone and a big achievement for VW. Just some other facts around that as well. They are launching 10 new models now in 2017. They're going to have 19 new kind of SUVs by 2020.
Jeez.
And they want to have over 1 million electric vehicles on the road by 2025.
That's amazing.
Which is really, really nice. So tech obviously pushing ahead, which is really, really, really cool. Then some news from Down Under. 12 people were hurt in Australia at a drag race event. There's a drag race that sprayed burning fuel over the crowd.
Wow.
Obviously the car was, you know, in the lane and spat fuel everywhere, and it was fuel that obviously caught on fire and it landed up on people. So that's not really, really nice. Anyway, just some news out of Australia that I saw this morning. Nice to know that SA car sales, new car sales are up by over 3,000 units year on year, which is a positive sign, if you ask me.
Yeah, I know it is a positive sign. I think, you know, the economy has to take a turn at some point. And often these little markers are indications of the economy beginning to turn positively.
Yes.
I mean, we haven't been in a major recession, so
yeah.
So it hasn't been negative, but it's been flat.
It's been flat.
Yes.
So
maybe this is a positive sign, because new car sales have been declining for a long time.
Yeah. So some good news coming out of the car market there. Bad news for us as drivers, though, is the petrol price is going up this week, Wednesday. So I think it's 67 cents a litre and 44 on diesel. So make sure you fill up today or tomorrow.
I'm not sure about whether filling up beforehand makes a big difference. I mean, we should actually do the maths around... for one tank of fuel, how much money does it actually save you? Because the next tank is at the high price anyway.
So you might save a couple of cents or rands.
Maybe 2 or 3 rand. But how much does it really save you?
We should run those numbers. I'll make a note of that.
What does it say? 63 cents?
67 cents a litre.
67 cents.
What's the average tank size?
Average tank size probably 55 litres.
Yeah.
Times 67 cents. It's 37 rand.
You put petrol in on Friday then, if you ask me.
That's like 2 cups of coffee.
Yeah. Well, doesn't make a massive difference, because you fill up, it's done within a week, and then you got to fill up again. I see our transport minister has refuted media report that governments have proposed new laws following the failure of the e-toll revenue collection.
This should be interesting.
6 billion rand still in unpaid bills on the e-tolls. So I don't know what's happening there. I did see a poster headline, newspaper poster board last week saying that there is a new plan for this. And I've also heard murmurings that we spoke about this, that they're going to turn it into kind of speed camera.
Yeah. Those gantries are so big, they could probably get some revenue in making billboards out of them, doing something else with the gantries, speed cameras.
I've got no problem. If you're speeding and you get a fine, you must pay it 100%. Mm. But I just think we know that people do drive fast on the highway, so monitor it. And maybe if the cameras are monitoring the highways, the police force, the traffic
can react.
And maybe can go onto kind of smaller roads, Mercedes-Benz have launched an initiative. They've put innovation on the road with students and startup with quite a big competition. So Mercedes-Benz, obviously being part of the Daimler network, there's three companies involved in this. There's Launch Lab, which is a business incubator that's based out in Stellenbosch, and these guys develop entrepreneurial ecosystems to accelerate entrepreneurial growth in the country. And then there's a company called Startup Autobahn, which is a global innovations platform. This was co-founded by Daimler, and they connect startups with corporates. And what Mercedes-Benz South Africa have done is they've put a competition out. They're running it in two different streams. The first stream is to students and professionals to submit their ideas, and the prize is obviously incubation support for an innovative idea that would obviously benefit the motor industry. The second stream is for existing startups, and they've got a potload of money. It's about 600,000 rand up for grabs there for supply development and international exposure.
That's
for
brilliant.
A company that's already started up. And then there's also a possibility to become a supplier to Daimler on a global scale. So I really think that's great from Mercedes-Benz, driving innovation and creating opportunity for entrepreneurs and startups to kind of, get bigger and wider exposure.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on. One thing that I think makes a country successful is when there are a lot of small startup, not necessarily startup, but family businesses, where there are more family businesses and more small businesses than there are big corporates, because that creates that kind of economy and a job for everybody, because you're really just looking after yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant.
No, I think it's really, really good. So we'll keep an eye on that and see what happens. I'm sure in the not too distant future we'll be hearing about South Africans, going global again and really doing well in the motor industry. And then just lastly, quickly, and I thought this was really, really funny. Toyota have a Free State woman must leave Toyota South Africa alone. A court rule. So this has gone to court. There was a lady who bought a 2001 Mitsubishi Colt Bucky from a Toyota dealership in Bloemfontein. And she basically, then she got an extended warranty on it. There was a bit of an issue with the vehicle. She took it back to them. I don't know what had happened, or there was a 40,000 rand bill which she refuses to pay. And a couple of months later, Toyota were issued with a lawsuit stating that she now needed 33 million from them because she hasn't been able to work. So, and she's been harassing them on social media, and they've actually gone to court about it, and the judge has said, listen, you've got to leave Toyota South Africa alone.
Oh, wow.
So just someone obviously stirring the pot. I mean, we deal with this sometimes where you just get people who think that they have a right to, you know,
use social media
as a platform, and I think it is a platform there that does help the consumer at the end of the day, but I also think some people kind of don't toe the line, and they
in context, you know. So I think it's a good idea because it creates transparency, it creates you know, accountability in some instances, but some people take it too far.
Yeah, exactly, you
know, they absolutely take it too far,
really really pushing the boundaries there. So anyway, that's it from the news. You know, so some good stuff happening out there in the motoring industry, which is really really fantastic. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch it, but yesterday was the Italian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And did you watch it at all?
Okay.
Well,
I raced back from the SA Festival of Motoring to watch it at 12:30. So okay. It was a good race. You know, again, Hamilton was out in the front. It was the Italian Grand Prix, so
a lot of unhappy Ferrari fans. Yeah.
The Saturday qualifying was mired with rain, so and it was, you know, I haven't seen rain like that in this year's season yet.
Yeah,
and the Ferraris just didn't do well in the rain. I mean, the rain master, Michael Schumacher, obviously is not around in racing, but you know, the Ferraris just didn't do well in the rain on Saturday, and they weren't positioned at the top of the grid. What was nice to see was that guys like Ocon were at the top of the grid, and they did well in the rain. So yeah, it really shuffled up the grid. The Red Bull cars had penalties, so they had to start further back, but they did really well as well. They were they qualified in the top four. But they had penalties because they had engine changes. At the end of the day, Hamilton got pole.
Yes.
Which wasn't surprising. Yeah. You know, we all know that the Mercedes has got a longer power stint, and okay, it does well on the straights.
Yes.
So this track kind of suits the Mercedes versus the Ferrari, but the rain just stuffed everything up on Saturday. Didn't stuff everything up, just mixed everything up a little bit, and the Ferraris just weren't at the top of the grid. But they did well because Vettel ended up, third. And
It was a 1-2. It was a 1-2 for Mercedes Benz and Ferrari in third, and that obviously means that Hamilton's now taken over the lead of the title.
Yes, just
3 points. Points ahead. Yeah,
he's got 3 points ahead, and he's beaming from ear to ear. So, but it's a good thing for the sport because it means that both Vettel and Hamilton are now neck on neck.
Yeah.
And you know, the next Grand Prix is going to be one for Ferrari because Ferrari is suited to street type circuits, corners, not long straights.
Yes, okay, and that's the Singapore Grand Prix on the 17th.
Yeah,
and is that a street similar to a street circuit?
I think it's a street circuit, but it's very short straights, not these long windy bends, which Mercedes is suited to.
Yeah, I see. Just coming out of some MotoGP news, I don't know if you heard, but Valentino Rossi broke his leg while he was training last week.
Yes,
Thursday,
I heard so.
Broke his leg. He had a successful operation on Friday the 1st, but it looks like he's going to be out for a 3-month period. So his title hopes have gone down the drain.
I wonder how often bike riders break things.
I'm sure they get injured.
Yeah, you don't have
a hell of a lot. And the thing is, he was riding an enduro bike, so he was training.
Yeah,
but it wasn't even on one of his.
It's funny how these racing riders and racing drivers, you know, barring people like Niki Lauda and Ayrton Senna, etc., but a lot of them have accidents outside of their main sport.
Yeah,
and their main sport is so dangerous.
That's the thing. But I suppose they obviously kits it up, but there is a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
So you'll find guys that will, you know, like a Rossi will ride an enduro bike and they'll go out and do dirt biking, and that's probably where they get injured because they probably aren't having a little bit of fun.
They're
as well.
Having fun.
They're not in race mode.
It's not a professional kind of sport for them, like Schumacher. He was skiing. You know, hit his head on a rock, and that was the end.
Crazy. I did see on your blog that you switched on the TV the other day and you watched a race, and the commentator, the Schumacher name, was back out there.
Yeah, so Schumacher's son,
yes.
Mick Schumacher, he rode Michael Schumacher's first winning car at last Hungary Grand Prix.
Oh, wow.
The Hungarian Grand Prix, he did a lap in it. So I'm hoping that his son actually gets into Formula One in a serious way. But it was nice to see that the Schumachers are still into Formula One.
Fantastic. Yeah, so that's a bit of a recap from the world of Formula One and MotoGP. And what we're going to do now is we're going to just unpack the phenomenal, phenomenal weekend that was held at Kyalami. And as we all know, and we alluded to, the South African motor experience took place from Thursday last week, from Friday for the public, so Friday, Saturday and Sunday. We were there. We obviously had a stand there. We ran a really, really cool competition. And I must say, I was blown away by the support of the South African public. I think the event was put on. It was absolutely phenomenal. You were there yesterday, George. Do you want to give us your thoughts on the show?
You were saying that on Saturday. I mean, I'm in a way glad I didn't go on Saturday and I went on Sunday, mm-hmm. because you were saying that there was a half an hour wait at the gate.
Yeah, the guys are telling us that they actually had to make people queue in the cars because they just could not, you know, get the people in quick enough. Which is really testament to a successful event, and the South African public obviously came out in support of that.
It's brilliant.
You know, obviously with social media and stuff, and speaking to the organisers, there were no incidences over the entire 3 days.
Wow.
I did see that on Friday nights and Saturday nights, when the show ended, there weren't people that were like loitering around, because obviously you can buy alcohol and there's a bit of like a festive. There was a gig ring and music and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't see people like, you know, lingering and, you know, the fall down kind of get drunk crowd that you do find at events.
Yeah.
So I think people came out, respect that it's a motoring event. They understand drinking and driving.
Yeah.
I had one or two beers in the afternoon, and then you know what, get into our cars and go home.
Yeah.
It really, really was a fantastic show.
I think
show.
It was phenomenal. My favorite part of the show was the supercar area.
Yes,
it could have been a bit bigger.
Yeah,
because it was crowded when I went and packed when I went to go and see those.
That was above the skid pans, am I right?
No, it was at the bottom.
Okay,
on the edge of the Kyalami building, round part.
Oh yes, okay, yes.
And I thought that was awesome. That should be bigger and more supercars. And you know, my second favorite thing was obviously the fact that people go around on the track. I didn't get to go around on the track, but I think that was phenomenal. And,
I heard one or two people moaning about having to stand in queues and.
Well, you know that it's successful when you.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
When there's queues.
Yeah, exactly. And I must say, like, all the brands that were there, everyone got given kind of three pit lanes. We spent quite a bit of time with the Messe Frankfurt guys who were unpacking, you know, the rules around having the same amount of pit lanes for the smaller brands as well as the bigger brands.
Yeah.
So because, you know, the likes of, obviously the budgets, you know, make a difference. So the likes of a VW or an Audi or a Merc could say, right, cool, we're going to have eight gates. And they limited each brand to only three, which allowed other brands to take part as well. I mean, I was there on Friday where the launch of the new Haval, which is a Chinese SUV brand, number one selling SUV brand for the last 4 years, last 6 years in China, but fourth in terms of numbers globally. And it was just nice to see new brands in South Africa, priced really well, built really, really well. I was blown away by the spec of the vehicle. So nice to see that smaller brands, new brands, had an opportunity to sit alongside the bigger brands that are in South Africa.
The whole show was absolutely phenomenal. Another area that I enjoyed was upstairs. As you walked up the stairs, you got all of those classic racing cars.
Yes.
That was nice to see. You know, the Wingfield BMW 7 Series and the others. Those were amazing. How did they get them up there?
Well, they drive them over that gang.
They drive them over that bridge.
Yes, they drive them there. So they were driving them all in on Thursday. So we watched those cars all come in, and then they got set up and parked and stuff. Yeah. Really, really nice, and just nice to see that we actually are, you know, promoting and supporting the motoring heritage in South Africa, which runs pretty deep, I understand.
Well, I mean, we've got two really cool shows now. We've got the bike festival and we've got the motoring festival. Yes. So I'm hoping that just grows and grows and grows.
I think it definitely is going to grow.
And I'm glad Autotrade is part of it.
Well, that for me was really, really key, you know. And what we spoke about is it just gives us a tangible opportunity to engage with our consumer base. Obviously, being a digital business, we get to have conversations with consumers, which was really, really nice. We ran a fantastic competition. We gave away an opportunity to win a hot lap with one of the Monster Energy team drivers that are coming out here for Auto Circus and Gymkhana Grid being a part of that in November. And guys were just flocking to the stand. They really want to, I mean, South Africans love motor cars. They really, really do. You know, I don't think I understood the size of the kind of the motoring fanatics
and
out there.
And everybody and anybody was there on the weekend. You know, it wasn't like you had these petrol heads that that looked like, I don't know what a petrol head looks like, but you know, everybody, their wives, their kids, everybody was there. And it was people of all shapes, all genders, all sizes, races. Everybody was there. So
exactly.
It just shows you that, you know, South Africans, no matter what, are into motoring.
But I think that's what the event, and you know, Constantine was alluding to this, it is not just about an event for people who want to get into a car and go around a track. There's something to do for everybody. I mean, they had a whole boat
that was amazing.
The lifestyle display downstairs. I mean, I saw Oaks walking around with wakeboards. I was like, guys are out here buying wakeboards.
Cheyenne said, Mommy, there's no water. How do the boats get here?
Where are they going to park those things? Exactly. No, but I mean, and there were some spectacular boats on display there. You know, some really, really nice, some nice stuff. Some other stuff that came out of the show, I don't know if you guys know, but Land Rover have just announced quite a large partnership with South African Rugby Union, with SARU. They were there on Friday morning with Land Rover, and there was a whole press conference. John Smith, all the Springboks were there. Those Oaks are huge.
I know. You don't realize how big a rugby player is until you see them.
I was actually standing next to Eben Etzebeth, and I was just looking at the size of his hands, and I was going, my gosh, if that gives you a tati, you're going to know all about it. You really, really are. So, so Land Rover in partnership now with the Box, which is really, really fantastic. And then something that was, you know, quite nice for me is, you know, the Goodwood Speed and Sound Festival.
Yeah.
We actually got to meet, the gentleman's name is Will Kinsman. He is the head of motoring content for the Goodwood show.
Oh, wow.
And what Messer Frankfurt did is they brought him out here to just experience the Festival of Motoring the same way a South African consumer would. So there was no bells and whistles or you get to jump a queue.
Yeah.
It was come down and experience the show like a consumer would. And he said he was absolutely blown away. He said it really, really is a fantastic show. Well put on.
Yeah.
The, you know, it's clean. There's ablution facilities everywhere. He was really, he just sang the praises of the guys from Messer Frankfurt, saying
That's
that
brilliant.
It really, really was a good show. And then I suppose how do you recap it? Fazana, let's get you in here because you spend quite a bit of time running around the track doing a whole bunch of social medias. You are quite a car fanatic. What's your take on the show? What were your likes? What were your dislikes? What do you think?
I was actually a little disappointed.
Okay.
Compared to last year's show and this year, there wasn't that much to see. There was only basically the...
Carry on.
Basically, the track.
There you go. Mike's in the right place now.
The track experiences for all the different brands. I guess as a motoring journalist, I had somebody else tagging along with me, another junior journalist, and she wasn't that excited to go drive. I mean, as journalists, we do get to drive a lot of the cars and test the cars and stuff. But for normal people, I mean, that would be fun and that would be exciting, getting to drive the cars. But other than that, there wasn't that much to see. Like last year, there was more manufacturer displays,
I suppose as a journalist, your kind of bar is a little bit higher compared to the motoring public.
Yeah.
Having to, driving the car that you drive, you probably want to get into a supercar.
Yeah. We were waiting to get into the AMG.
Okay.
AMG line.
Yeah.
But the queues were just insane.
Crazy.
Yeah,
I think that's something that I spoke to you about off air. My comparison on last year versus just this year is they left out the OEM village. And that's where I experienced Mercedes-Benz. They had their virtual reality kind of headsets. You know, the kids were playing with virtual reality. VW had that ski slope. They had a whole bunch of activations that you had to, you know, go through to enter to win whatever it was or however they ran it. I remember Datsun being there.
Yeah.
So for me, the OEM village section that's the one thing I can recall missing from this year's show. And I tend to agree with you. That for me would be the only negative that I'd put on it. You know, all the big brands were there, but the focus was obviously on getting bums in seats and getting people to experience the cars, which is what the festival's about. But I still think there's another element to it.
Yeah, but if you had to compare it from last year to this year, there were much more awesome elements to this year.
100%.
And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, everybody learns as you go along. And we heard Constantine say this is a kind of a learning process for them.
Yes.
And I think all of those things you talk about are going to be kind of looked at critically and changed for the next one. So, you know, it's good that I think if we think the OEM village is missing, you know, something that Constantine and the guys would bring into the show if that's what the public wants.
Exactly. So I can say that 2018 has been confirmed. So the motoring experience will happen again next year. That's already been signed, sealed, and delivered. West Bank are obviously on board with that again. I think they did a fantastic job of branding the event and you know they as the headline sponsor. There will be new features. They are going to have more pit space in 2018, and there's going to be a feature area that will unpack new tech in cars. Now, I remember when we had Constantine, we were asking, are we going to see any electric vehicles?
That
would be nice. And I think that is going to come in 2018. And then they also spoke about a feature, country feature, where what they'll do is they'll highlight one particular country, you know, their motoring. So we could have, you know, China, and you'll see what cars are driven in China.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
You know, what's happening in France, the different brands that are in France. And what's really nice is this will work vice versa. I mean, these guys have got, I think they run over 1,800 shows or whatever it is in a year across the country. So it's also nice to know that South African motoring could be taken to other countries where we can get exposure as a motoring nation.
Love
so
it.
All in all, I think a fantastic show. I'm glad that it's going to happen in 2018 again. There's going to be a lot more excitement and stuff going down. So hats off to the guys from Messe Frankfurt and all the organizers, all the OEMs, the brands, and I think the South African public, you know, hats off to you all for coming out and supporting what is really, really a great event.
Loved it.
All right, fantastic. Up next, we are reviewing, we don't have Chad, but Chad's done a review for us on the new VW Amarok. And I can actually add my 5 cents worth this time because I actually did experience the Amarok on the 4x4 track yesterday with my boys. We actually ended up going over the 4x4 track in the Amarok, the new Discovery, which is an absolutely spectacular car, and the Range Rover. But let's just tune in to Chad and see what he has to say about the Amarok.
Hi guys, welcome to our review of the new Volkswagen Amarok. It is one of those launches that people have been discussing, talking about, and well, been looking forward to. Well, we've been driving the new Amarok. It's been out for a few months, and we couldn't wait to get our grubby little paws on it. We recently had the Nissan Navara, and you may have heard our review on that one, and we were very keen to see how the new Amarok stacks up against the Navara, because we rate that Navara quite high. It's a well-rounded vehicle that drives really nice, makes a good amount of power, and doesn't look too bad either. Now, the new Amarok isn't an all-new vehicle. It's still using the old chassis, but it is updated. So we've got some new styling, new interior, but the big news is the new engine. Well, it's new to South Africa, at least. The pre-facelift was never available with a 3-litre V6 turbo diesel. but it is now. So you've got three engine options to choose from. You can have the 2-liter TDI with a single turbo. You can have the 2-liter bi-TDI, and that bi stands for two, and that means, yes, twin turbo. So there is a twin turbo 2-liter available as well. And now you've got the 3-liter V6 TDI. And that's right, we now get that 3-liter V6 that we never got before. And I tell you what, worth every cent, worth the wait, because this motor is really, really special. And this is the bit that really sets the VW Amarok apart from the rest, is its sheer speed and power. It is fast. It's not only fast for a double cab, it's fast, period. Talking numbers, we're talking about 165 kilowatts, and it's going to develop that power between 3,000 and 4,500 RPM. With that comes 550 newton meters of torque. But it's where it develops that torque that's really cool. 1,400 RPM is where the torque sort of comes in, and it holds it nice and steady all the way to just past 2,700 RPM. So it's a lovely broad torque band. It's not only 1,000 RPM to work with, it's closer to, well, 1,500 RPM to work with. And that does make it considerably easier to drive. Now that's mated to a full motion all-wheel drive system, and that helps this vehicle accelerate from 0 to 100 in a mere 8 seconds, or at least VW claims it. 8 seconds, 0 to 100, and it's going to top out maximum speed, top speed of just shy of 200 kilometers an hour, 193 kilometers an hour, they say. Now they say that it's fairly fuel efficient, and on the combined cycle, on average, it's going to get about 9 liters per 100. Sorry, but we weren't getting near there. We were a full liter per 100 off. We were hovering around the 10 mark. We saw it dip to just below 10 at 9.9, but that was with a considerably lengthy bout of highway driving at the speed limit. It was hovering around 10 for most of the time, and they claim that it's going to go all the way down to 8.1 when you hit the highway, and I don't see how you're going to get that. I think you're going to drop to down towards 9, but you're not quite going to see those 8s. Nevertheless, it's worth it because this thing accelerates like a rocket. It is a big, hefty vehicle, but it certainly goes like a sports car, and it really is entertaining to drive. It feels solid. It feels beautifully bolted together. And that was another aspect that we were really, really keen to compare, especially up against the new Navara. We really liked the way that the Navara drove in terms of its ride, its comfort, and its handling. And the new Amarok, while not bad, falls just a little bit shy. You see, unfortunately, it is still running that older suspension, that leaf spring setup, and that live rear axle at the back. And that means that, well, the back end is still a little bouncy and a little jumpy and, well, traditional double cab. And the Navara with its coil springs, well, that's definitely got the Amarok pipped there. But in the rest of the cabin, in the rest of the NVH levels, the noise, vibration, harshness levels, nah, the Amarok is a solid buy. It's got a beautifully trimmed cabin in typical VW quality, VW's usual high standard, what you've come to expect from them. Now, it's styled very similar, the new dashboard, to the Golf SV, and you may not know the Golf SV because that didn't sell really well. But it's not a bad looking interior. It really does look nice. It's got a great infotainment system in there. And that infotainment system actually caused us a little bit of a headache because it had something which was known as Voice Enhancer. That's a clever system that uses the built-in microphone that sits up by the dome light, by the rearview mirror. And it captures the driver and the front passenger's voice and plumbs it through the rear speaker so that you don't need to shout to your rear passengers. Now, we regarded this as being a little bit of an echo. And we eventually found out that it was this Voice Enhancer, and when we switched it off, we could hear how beautifully quiet the interior of the new Amarok is. And it is. It's wonderfully trimmed. The model we were driving, and there's three models to choose from. You get Highline, Highline Plus, and the Extreme. We were driving the entry-level one, but it had a couple of option specs. So we had leather interior with heated seats. We, of course, had the great infotainment system, multifunction steering wheel, and all that type of stuff. We had a good number of options thrown at this vehicle, and it was wonderfully well-rounded. With the leather interior and all that, it was nice and comfortable. I don't know how comfortable it would be on a super long trip, but it was comfortable enough, and it was very, very spacious, I must say this. Not so much in terms of legroom, but in terms of shoulder room. It feels very, very wide inside the cabin of the Amarok. It felt like the window was almost an arm's length away and that the passenger was sitting in a different time zone. So very broad, very wide, and that gives a great illusion of space. So for us broader sort of South African front row rugby player builds, the Amarok is definitely one that's going to cater for the broader shoulders. You're not going to feel as claustrophobic in it. It is very, very nicely trimmed. Can't really fault it, except for that vocal enhancer, which makes it seem like there's a little bit of an echo. One or two of the plastics that you're not supposed to touch are still hard-wearing plastics, but the rest of the stuff that you are supposed to touch, well, that feels great. Some people lament to the point that it's running an 8-speed automatic gearbox, saying that there's too many gear changes. Not so much on the up change, because you don't really feel the up changes, but rather on the down change. I tend to disagree there. Yes, it can be felt when you're driving in town and you're accelerating up and it's changing up 4 or 5 gears and then changing back down them again. But that's keeping that engine in that nice little torque band, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I really don't. It's one of those things that you can sort of live with. In terms of styling, we've got some LED daytime running lights, and you can spec LED headlights now as an option. And they've definitely tidied up the front end. It's still got a nice, beautiful presence, but it matches that of the rest of the offerings, the likes of the Jettas and the Passats and, of course, the Golf, and you're seeing it come through in the front end, immediately distinguishable from the outgoing model. It runs on nice big 18-inch wheels, well, the Highline version, and if you're going to go for the Extreme, well, that's going to roll on a set of 20s. And I'm not going to say that it's not meant for off-road, but I wouldn't take those 20s off-road. Now, the drivetrain is the 4Motion, and while that's not necessarily a full low range with transfer case setup, it is pretty capable off-road, and they give you a couple of electronic aids that is going to help you over the rough stuff. So let's get down to the price here. The Volkswagen Amarok, the 2-litre TDI double cab in a comfort line trim, is going to cost you, well, let's call it 498,000 Rand. You're going to get about 500 Rand's change for that. The one that we were driving, 680,000 Rand. That is the 3-litre V6 TDI double cab Highline 4Motion version. The top of the range one, the big extreme one that comes with the 20-inch wheels and all the mod cons, including the LED headlights, well, that one's going to set you back, get this, 763,600 Rand. That's a lot of money for a double cab, and it puts it about 100,000 Rand more expensive than the most expensive Navara, but you are getting a lot of motor for your money. But sadly, that's pretty much all you're getting, is a lot more motor. You would really have to drive them, and I think this one's going to be a one for fans only. It is a lot of vehicle, and it's great on the road. I'm sure it's pretty good off-road as well. But for me, it's a tough call. 763,000 Rand is a lot of money for a double cab. Our video's up on YouTube. Go and check what it looks like and more of what we think about the Amarok versus the Navara on our YouTube channel. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Lovely, Chad. Thanks very much. Great review there. And yeah, I tend to agree with Chad. I think having driven the car and experienced it, it really, really is fantastic. But that's quite a hefty price tag. You know, George, we were just talking now while Chad was doing his thing there. You were saying, you question why or how cars. Price the models that they used to price their vehicles.
Well, there's a lot of input going into it.
And no,
I don't think these things are cheap to make.
No,
but I wish that the pricing was like consumer electronics. Where you know, the new model comes in at the old model's price, and the old model just drops in price.
Yeah.
But I don't think cars are quite made the same way. Mm. Especially with the fossil fuel cars.
Yeah,
hopefully. Because of the technology, electric cars will follow that model, you know, and the prices effectively don't rise that much because the new model comes in at the old model's price,
sure,
and the old model just reduces in price,
yeah,
you know. But I suppose with fossil fuel cars, there's a lot more input.
I suppose that's quite an interesting point that you make there, and you wonder if it is, you know, with the influx of electric cars that we should see in the next kind of, let's say, 5 years, it's really going to shake up the industry. And if they do change their kind of pricing models or how that's, you know, perceived, it could rattle some cages.
Well, I mean, we haven't seen mass-produced electric cars yet.
Yeah.
It's coming. I mean, we haven't seen, and every manufacturer is beginning to get into electric cars in some way, shape, or form. You know, the Volvo, and we're probably going to talk about the Tesla truck just now. But You know, that might just do something to being able to keep the price of cars down.
Yeah, because I mean, you do notice that car pricing continues to increase, and that's obviously taxes and all that kind of stuff. But it should get to a stage where it could, you know, level out.
Well, not if you've got new, I suppose, mechanical technology getting into the cars all the time.
Yes.
You know, and that mechanical technology costs money to develop.
Yeah.
With electric cars, there's far fewer moving parts.
Okay.
Which means that most of the car's brain and is software.
Okay.
You know, you don't have that many moving parts. You've got the electric motor between the wheels, and that's about all, you know, the
you
electric
really
windows,
yeah.
maybe sunroof,
yeah.
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there's no engine like the engines in fossil-fueled cars that have to have all of this moving part and mechanical technology to make it work.
Yeah. So some interesting times ahead there. I also question on the pricing of that. I mean, an Amarok's a fantastic car, and it kind of, you know, I suppose there are a lot of people who make money so they can afford them, which is why they price like they do, and with taxes and stuff. That's just the way it is. People will buy the cars, otherwise they wouldn't. I mean, they obviously do the research when they're pricing these vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, in the car industry, I don't think there is. It's a case of the cars are overpriced. They're priced based on the input costs
Correct.
That go into producing that car and bringing it to market.
Yeah.
It's expensive to do.
Yeah.
And maybe electric cars can change that.
100%. Fantastic. Well, talking about tech and stuff, I see Samsung have secured a self-driving car permit for California. So Samsung have entered the self-driving car market now. The firm said on Thursday it received the permit to test its vehicles in California, but it does face fierce competition because we obviously know that Apple received the permit four months ago. And basically what this goes to unpack is that Samsung are testing their self-drive technology on vehicles, which is really, really exciting to see. So, you know, cell phone companies now playing in the motor industry, as Apple have been doing for a while. Makes for exciting times. Like, you know, you're going to get to maybe one day you're going to get to a dealership and there's the whatever the car is, and you can choose whether you want it on an Android or you've wanted on Apple.
On another piece of software. Yeah, I don't know. The jury's out on the future of electric cars and who's going to take the lead. But at the end of the day, it's the way the world has to go.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm excited that I'm living in this time.
Yeah, exactly. We were talking about their Tesla, about their trucks that can almost drive in platoons. Do you want to unpack the theory behind that, George, and how that would actually work?
Yeah, so Tesla particularly, they've been doing it with the Model S for a long time.
Okay.
The cars are effectively connected to each other. So they learn from each other.
Mm.
So Tesla's taken all of this technology and all of this learning, and they've put it into a self-driving semi-truck,
a proper horse and tractor rig. All right.
And you know, it's like an autonomous self-driving rig effectively, and this thing can do between 200 and 300 miles, which is good, I think.
Yeah.
And if any industry is the one that is affecting the ozone the most, it's probably the trucking industry,
because
most of those trucks are diesel, they're not efficient, all of that stuff.
Mm.
And if any industry needs this kind of technology, it's the trucking industry, because of the fumes.
Would be fantastic. So, I mean, you could literally plug your, you know, you pack your trucks up with the cargo that they need to move, punch your numbers onto your keyboard and send your all the stock that you got to deliver to wherever it needs to go.
Yeah.
And like you say, these trucks will actually learn from each other.
Yeah, so they learn from each other. And it looks like they're going to launch it into high density areas first.
Okay.
Which makes sense because, you know, you don't want a truck doing 100 kilometers an hour autonomously.
Yeah.
So they seem to be staging it.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. So, you know, Tesla obviously still doing great things. We were talking.
Well, they're going to unveil this thing in a year.
So next year, these things will be on the road. Obviously, in the States, obviously, first. And
well, unveiling it, you know, whether they're going to test it for a while first. Is I'm sure they've been testing it undercover, but test it in the public is going to be the first step they take.
Yes. Let's just see a truck driving past with no driver. Crazy.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that this autonomous truck is going to have a driver behind that steering wheel for a couple of years first.
Yeah. Nice to know. I see here, and you were talking about, you know, who's going to win this race. I see Jaguar... SA-bound I-Pace SUV. So Jaguar Land Rover commits to electric car future. And the article talks about these vehicles with its first all-electric and hybrid models arriving in South Africa from 2019. The Jaguar I-Pace will be the company's first all-electric vehicle. It's going to be introduced in South Africa in 2019, which I think is really, really exciting. So another brand that has gone, you know, hang on a sec here. This is where it's going, or, you know, this is the solution to the current motoring industry. What's really nice is that Jaguar said that they've invested 1.1 billion rand on updating its retail network, and all the local retailers will be fully prepared to sell and service electric cars. So it's not just about bringing the cars, but putting the infrastructure in place to service and manage.
I suppose that's our biggest drawback is the electric cars can drive on any road. It's can you charge it?
Exactly.
Can you drive from here to Durban and charge it in between?
Yeah.
And the answer right now is no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in my day to day, kind of running around and out and about, I haven't seen too many charging stations advertised. Or I suppose if you go to some dealerships, they've got them. But I think in general, I mean, I know some shopping centres do, but I still haven't walked into a place and gone, oh, there's a charging station if you're driving an electric car. So I think infrastructure is obviously very important. It needs to be, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, this I-Pace apparently can do 500 kilometers in terms of range, and it does 0 to 100 in 4 seconds. So it's up there with the likes of Tesla in terms of speed and range.
Yeah, fantastic. So that's really, really great. And then, yeah, just before we wrap up the show, and this is taking tech to a completely new level, but there are a number of companies who are testing, producing, and you know, leading the charge of flying cars. So, if flying electric vehicles, are we going to have these in our garage one day? And we'll talk about the different kind of elements now. But I think from a conversation point, I mean, you fly, right? How would this be managed? I mean, when you leave your garage in the morning, you decide where you're going to go. There's no traffic control, or you know.
So, I mean, right now, I mean, I'm a recreational pilot. I fly two aeroplanes, a microlight and a two-seater fixed wing.
Okay.
And the way we manage the sky is not with an air traffic controller, because we don't fly in controlled airspace. We fly in what's called uncontrolled airspace.
Okay.
You take off and you land from airports that are not controlled. There's no tower. There's no person manning the airport. You man each other.
So you're just in connection with each other.
You're talking to each other all the time.
So
the only way to really know what's going on in the sky is to make sure that you've got radio protocol. That's what we use. There's a predefined way in which we communicate where we are, how high we are, where we're traveling to, how fast we're traveling, what aircraft we're traveling, and there's, you know, and you tell everybody from time to time what's happening. So that's how we communicate in the sky right now. I would imagine that these flying vehicles would be in communication with each other electronically.
Okay.
Which means that the collision avoidance would be built into the aircraft.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes me doubt this is going to happen more than electric cars or autonomously driving cars is I wouldn't want to be a pedestrian walking down the street and I know that there's 100 of these little mosquitoes flying around above me, because what if one falls out the sky? It's going to hit me on the ground.
Yeah.
So how do you govern that? Yes. How do you govern the routes? And, you know, so those kinds of things I'm not sure have been thought about yet. So it's great to have the flying machine. But how do you now govern what route that flying machine actually takes to avoid – flying over crowds of people, flying over buildings.
Because it has to be controlled, doesn't it?
Yes,
I mean, you can't just pick up and fly a drone anywhere, can you?
Either. No, it's even, you know, it's hard to fly a drone. You're not allowed to fly it over crowds of people. You're not allowed to fly it over built up areas. And you're not allowed to fly it and control the airspace. And you've got to fly it under a certain height because there's aeroplanes flying around up there.
Yeah.
So I've got a drone myself, and I see some of these cowboy drone pilots they're actually putting people's lives at risk by doing what they're doing.
That's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, that has to obviously be controlled. But just in this kind of flying vehicle space, there's a Cormorant, which is an Israeli aerospace firm. They're producing that. Then there's a Kitty Hawk Fly, which I think is an American Silicon Valley-based company. Mm. The EHAG, which is Chinese. Then there's a Lithium. This is a German company.
Now, the Lithium is the one that I like.
Okay.
And the reason I like the Lithium is because it has both glide capabilities as well as hover capabilities.
Okay.
So the difference between that particular craft and the others is that it's got wings. The others have only got propellers that bring you up straight from the ground.
Yes.
Effectively like a helicopter.
Yeah.
Whereas what if something goes wrong? I mean, as a pilot, I know if that engine stops, the airplane's still gliding.
Yes, you can still land it.
You can still land it.
There's a chance that you can.
You can crash land it, but you can still land it.
Yeah.
And that's why I like the, is it called a Lilium?
Lilium.
Lilium.
Sorry, my bad. Yeah,
Lilium Jet.
Lilium Jet. And then there's obviously one from the French giant Airbus. And this also just...
They've got to be bigger and better, eh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are really just kind of drones on steroids, aren't they? Well, that one is anyway, this pop-up.
Yeah, so the pop-up one is a concept.
Sure.
And, I'm sure a lot of these are concepts, but there are quite a few actual units, like the EHAG has actually been built.
Yeah. Well, it's, just crazy to think that in this day and age, we live in an age where people are testing.
It's brilliant.
It really is brilliant.
Absolutely awesome.
But, like you say, the rules that are going to come with this and how to and where to and what to is all still out there. The skies
have to be governed properly before that can happen.
Well, they say the sky's the limit. We'll see what happens with all this kind of stuff. Well, George, thanks very much. That is the hour up again. Thank you very much for
coming
so quickly
in.
Fazana, thanks very much. You were really talkative today.
As always.
And we're glad you were here. And yes, that's it from the show. And if you don't tune in live, you can obviously download the podcast. And like I said, visit our social media channels at AutoTraderSA, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We out there. And we really are just a brand that wants to put buyers and sellers together in a safe environment. And that's what we do. So yeah, guys, have a fantastic week. And we'll chat soon.
This is CliffCentral.com.